Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked on Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Is Darvin Ham starting the wrong guys? That's next.
You are Locked on Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked on Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked on Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked on Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to find the show, see the show, experience the show in color. And you generally get that thing before the audio product goes up. So it's a great way to kind of get the jump on everybody else, participate in a great and growing community of people, almost up to 10,000 subscribers there, which we really appreciate. That is thanks to all of you guys. And one of the things the Lakers need to do, and this came up after the disaster Tuesday night, Andy, is stop getting off to terrible starts. The Lakers are a bad first quarter team, bottom third in the league in terms of first quarter point differential. And Darvin Ham noted after the Lakers came back on Tuesday and then blew that lead that they'd built up. Part of the problem, part of the reason they get so tired is they keep falling behind. And as you pointed out, part of the reason they fall behind is perhaps who's starting these games.
Yeah. Something I've been talking about a lot over the last week or so, but this game in particular, I think, was another episode of why Patrick Beverley just, I think, needs to come out of the starting lineup. You could argue that he is not the only candidate to come out. I've seen people talk about Dennis Schroeder, and there is an argument that could be made for Schroeder, but I think if you were to pick one person, it would be Patrick Beverley, and it's pretty obvious the offensive struggles that he has and just the complete lack of anything remotely consistent in terms of contributions there. I was looking up his first quarter net rating. It's a minus 16.6. Alex Regla over at Silver Screen and Roll, a friend of the show, you can follow him on Twitter, Alex M. Regla, had a really interesting thread that underscored some of the points I want to make. Alex tweeted out, according to @CleanTheGlass, great website, LeBron and Anthony Davis have played exactly 1,000 possessions together this season. The Lakers are plus 2.2 in those, which you would want it to be higher. Then zooming in, he looked at the different players paired with LeBron and AD and their net ratings with them. It ranges everywhere from Austin Reeves, plus 9, down to Patrick Beverley, minus 1.8. He's not the only minus. Lonnie Walker, minus 1.6. But then you get to a bunch of floor combinations that lead to positive net ratings per bunch with different positive net ratings. They can involve Dennis Schroeder. They can involve Troy Brown. They can involve Lonnie Walker. They can involve even Russell Westbrook with LeBron and AD. Even this year right now, LeBron and AD slightly positive together, LeBron, AD, and Russ, and that's always been an issue. And he noted that the players that are standing out with good results next to LeBron and AD so far are Reeves and Schroeder. The four-man without Beverley on the floor, plus 31.3, would really kick the tires on that four-man as a base for the starting lineup moving forward. Walker or Brown each makes sense for the fifth. I would not argue about Austin Reeves starting. I personally like him off the bench with Russ. I think they play well off each other. I think in certain respects, he serves as Russ's conscience. Like, he's almost like the good angel with Russ being the devil on I guess, the shoulders of a basketball. I would put Troy Brown back in there as opposed to Beverley because I just think it's simplest. But
he's played significantly better as a starter than as a reserve, for what it's worth. If you want to try to maximize what you can get out of Troy Brown, it seems to have happened better with him as a starter than as a reserve.
Yes, that is among the practical things that I was going to get into. Troy Brown as a starter this season, averaging almost 47% from the field, 36.5% from behind the arc. As a reserve, 8 games, a little under 32% from the field, little under 16% from 3. He has a better net rating as a reserve than a starter, but I think you start looking, I think a lot of that it was weighed down to he was starting when the team was at their worst. But either way, I think Brown is more productive and potentially more impactful starting than coming off the bench, not just for himself, but for the full picture, because when Troy Brown starts, as opposed to Patrick Beverley, you are not so super small that everybody is forced to guard up an awful lot. You don't lose out the switchability that's there when you have two very undersized guards and Lonnie Walker forced to guard up as a three. There's just
or you're throwing Beverly on guys for longer stretches than you would want. Right. And he doesn't necessarily do a bad job all the time on it. Like in the defensive metrics for Beverly are good. Like, you know, it's interesting when you break down some of the lineup combinations. Like some of them are above water with Beverly in it because the defensive rating goes up. But in almost all of them, dare I say all of them, I just haven't looked at literally every combination that has Beverly in it, the offensive rating craters. So, you know, you are sacrificing so much offense with Beverly on the floor. And that is a really tough way to play.
And it's a tough way
to play. You got to have guys who can defend. But to make it so you have to be the best defensive team in basketball to win games is a really hard way to go because your offense is suffering.
Well, and also, too, unless you're going to take Dennis Schroeder out of the starting lineup, which I suppose is a possibility. To me, the problem with taking Schroeder out is unless you are going to just take him out of the rotation altogether, which, you know, he's had a rough few games, the last few in a row, but by and large, I think Schroeder should be playing. Schroeder and Russ cannot play together as a backcourt, like coming off the bench. You can make a theoretical case for Russ and Patrick Beverley together. Like it may not be great or ideal, but you can at least see how they can complement each other for no other reason than Patrick Beverley does not need, or I would argue even want, the ball. Schroeder and Russ don't make any sense together at all. So again, if you don't take Beverly out of that starting lineup, it's another layer of making it overly complicated because something needs to change.
Well, I will say this. It is abundantly clear. A few things have become abundantly clear about who can play and who cannot play and who can and cannot play at the same time. And like you say, it's not just about what one guy is or is not doing. It's about the domino effect that it has throughout the rest of the rotation. So a few things, if just a casual look at the numbers, become totally clear, Andy, and I will get into those things next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by ExpressVPN. Okay, we all know that ExpressVPN protects your privacy and online security, but here's what you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. It's going to change your world. Really simple. Just sign in to Netflix, fire up the ExpressVPN app, change your location to the UK, for example. Refresh Netflix. That is it. It allows you to control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. Just imagine all the Netflix libraries, for example, you can go through. And ExpressVPN works for any streaming service. It works on phones, media consoles, smart TVs, and more. So you can watch what you want to watch on the big screen or on the go. So if you want access to hundreds of new shows, go to expressvpn.com/lockedon. Right now, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/lockedon. That's expressvpn.com/lockedon to learn more.
All right. So this is a scene that happens particularly as we get into the holidays. You know, you're out, you're hanging with friends, you're hanging with coworkers, holiday parties. Now that we're all kind of gathering back together again, and you have a few drinks, and a few becomes a few too many. And as the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride, but no, you live nearby. You think you'll make it home okay. It's not a big deal. I mean, what are the odds you're going to get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst thing that could happen? You know, if you do, maybe your insurance goes up, you know, you lose your license, you lose your job, you total your car, you kill someone. Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk, and the results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe. Plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. All right. So I agree with you, Andy, that I feel like the impact of Beverly on the offense, the negative impact of Beverly on the offense, is not large enough to make up for his positive impact defensively as the Lakers continue to fall behind in games. Like, it's part of the reason that they are falling behind in games. And Schroeder, who is the other option here, is better offensively without giving up as much defensively. The extremes aren't as problematic with Beverly or with Schroeder. And I agree with you. If you're not going to start Schroeder, it's hard to figure out where to play him.
Yeah, in some respects, to be fair to Beverly, you know, his defense, I think, has been fine. Like we talked about, it can occasionally be very disruptive. It can be useful. But some of this is a function of his size and that it's very difficult to be like the non-offense stopper at that position. Like typically, that type of player is a wing, like a Tabo Cephalosa, you know, like somebody that maybe you're not going to get consistent offense from, but their size allows you so much versatility and optionality defensively that, you know, there's a bigger, larger effect from them being there. Like Lou Dort before he actually became somebody that could score. You know, you have to be like a wrecking machine defensively.
Matisse Thybulle, for example, is arguably one of the three or four or five best defensive players, just raw defensive, you know, players in the league. And Philly struggles to keep him on the floor as much as you would think based on that ability, in part because he is a lesser offensive player. And you talk about Tabo Cephalosha. Cephalosha at least had seasons where he shot 36, 37, 41, 42% from three-point range on taking two or three a game. Like, you know, Beverly has been a catastrophe offensively. But the other part of this that I think is undeniably true, whether you think it's Beverly, and just to finish your point, some of this isn't Beverly's fault because the roster was constructed, and a few people pointed this out. The imbalance of the roster is problematic here and punishes guys like Beverly because he can't put the combinations together that would allow him to be protected against the things he doesn't do well and thrive in the things that he does. In part because while they haven't traded Russell Westbrook, it seems like the roster was put together as if they were going to.
It was a hedge bet, if nothing else.
Right. And so they have all of these guards and no wings. And so it's imbalanced in that way. But what we have learned, it's not just that you can't play, that you shouldn't play Beverly early. And the Lakers ought to try something different so that they are not falling behind in these games. And they are not asking LeBron and AD to expend the kind of energy that needs to happen for them to make these comebacks, only to blow these games at the end. And have that energy amount to nothing. Like, they wasted it. LeBron played 43 minutes in Tuesday's game, played very well. AD was clearly out of gas. And that's worth it if you win. It's worth it if they get they make the comeback and they get the win. It is not worth it if you don't. And you have to try, but you damn well better win. And they didn't, and that's becoming a habit. But anyway, the other thing that's becoming incredibly clear, these little guard lineups, the multitude of little guards, whether it's Schroeder, Beverly, and Nunn playing together, Westbrook, Beverly, and Nunn, Beverly and Schroeder, whatever, they don't work. Those lineups are getting killed. The lineups where the Lakers have no size to speak of on the floor. Westbrook is a large human being and occasionally plays with sort of strength that gets to his size as a human. But I wouldn't consider him I still sort of think of him as a little defender, just because of, you know, the results.
Well, and also, let's be honest, Russell Westbrook is somebody that you're not counting on defensively to begin with. Often with Russ, what you're mostly hoping for is he doesn't blow up your defense.
Right. Beverly and Schroeder, and especially Nunn, are little people by basketball standards. You know, they're very slight. Beverly admirably is able to guard up sometimes, but he can't do it all the time, and sometimes doesn't work. And then when you start moving guys around into space, it is a terrible combination, and the numbers bear that out. Again, via Alex, Westbrook, Beverly, and Schroeder, -73.4 net rating. Schroeder, Beverly, and Nunn, -54.4. Westbrook, Beverly, and Nunn, -24.6. Do not put those lineups out together. And I realize this is not Ham's fault. This is the roster that was put together for him. And when you start pulling on those threads, you know, it's not like they got a bunch of other wings that they can play. It makes it very difficult to get other guys. There are repercussions and there are impacts in trying to balance the roster out and get the right combinations on the floor. But you may end up in a situation where you just got to play Austin Reeves 34 minutes a game. Well, and, you know, you got to figure out ways to get Troy Brown on the floor more, or maybe it's going to, but the bigger lineups for the Lakers have tended to work better. That certainly was the case on Tuesday. But what is a clear and obvious thing is the small lineups are getting killed, and you can't keep playing them.
Well, when you say that it's not Darvin Ham's fault, I agree that it's not his fault.
It's not Darvin Ham's fault that he has these players and right. has tried to figure out how to make it work.
Sure.
If he continues to play them going forward, it right, does become his fault. I'm saying it is not his fault that he has to work with what he has been given.
Sure, but I don't think he has often, or always at least, worked with what he has been given as well as he could. For example, like the idea of finding more minutes for Troy Brown, it ain't that complicated. Play him. Like, you know, off the bench, we talked earlier about it's been a lesser version of Troy Brown. It starts maybe becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, or maybe it's the way Ham's using him, but he's also been playing fewer minutes when the restrictions of this roster dictate that he actually should be playing more. If he does not trust Juan Toscano-Anderson once JTA is actually back from that ankle sprain, I think he should consider giving Max Christie 10 to 12 minutes a night. Yep. If for no other reason than he is unique size-wise on this roster. He shouldn't be, but he is. And Christie can help them with defensive rebound. He's actually quite good at this for a rookie. I think his defensive instincts are good. He's certainly not going to get hurt, I think, any worse than some of the defenders out there or some of the positions that these defenders are being put in because the lineups are so small. He's athletic in ways that would work with the second unit. Like, there are things Darvin Ham could do
100%,
even given the restrictions 100% that he's working with.
100%.
And I think that's worth noting.
There's another bit of numbers that gets to, I think, these questions around lineups and execution and Darvin Ham and what exactly is going on the floor that we noted on Tuesday show after the big collapse in the fourth quarter. And Andy, it's trading time, and it's next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Okay, you have to try Built Bar's new reimagined flavors. Cookie dough topper, coconut brownie bar, coconut brownie topper, white chocolate peppermint granola. It's Built's take on the granola bar. It's way more filling, but insanely tasty. Plus, candy cane brownie puff. Built puffs are like biting into the universe's most delicious cloud. And if you've not tried Built Bar before, you are missing out on the best tasting protein bars ever built. They are revolutionizing nutrition as we know it. 100% real chocolate, 17 grams of protein, shockingly low sugar and calories, just 130 calories. Like, sink your teeth into that first bite and boom, you will know what we're talking about. It's impossible to pick a favorite new flavor. And guess what? You don't have to. Just order a mixed box. Try all five flavors for yourself. Get 15% off your order right now using the code LOCKEDON15 at Built.com. Again, LOCKEDON15, Built.com.
All right. So if it's trading season, Andy, that means it's time for Lakers fans to begin behaving irrationally. This from Anthony Lee on the Locked On Lakers YouTube page. It's just this easy to make the Lakers good again, Andy. Time to make a trade, he says. Give up the 2027 pick unprotected, 2 seconds, plus Reeves, Nunn, Beverly, Jones, Anderson, Brown, and Schroeder for Bogdanovich, Alec Burks, I think he means, and Sadiq Bey from Detroit. Then he says you throw in Russ Christie, the 2029 unprotected pick, two seconds for Terry Rozier, Plumlee, PJ Washington, and Kelly Oubre. This is the kind of creative thinking that I think Rob Pelinka needs to be engaged in. This Anthony Lee in two trades has turned over the entire roster except for two players. I really appreciate the enthusiasm with which he has done that. I don't think that kind of trade is going to happen, but it does get to the question.
If you reread that, I will quit this podcast.
Are you saying that those are not realistic trade options?
I just have a headache keeping up with it. Don't ever do that again. Thank you though for listening and watching, Anthony. Appreciate it. And the YouTube comment. But don't perhaps, ever do that again. But
the point being here, Lakers fans, the reason I read that out loud is Lakers fans need to temper, I think, what the expectations of what their capital can get them. Kyle Kuzma, via our friend Eric Pincus at Bleacher Report, is a name that is out there, along with Bojan Bogdanovic, another name that is out there. Kuzma can be a free agent this offseason, so there's a question of whether or not Washington will or would want to extend him, or if he wants to be extended in Washington. By the reports from Bleacher Report, Kuz wants to go back to a contender. He wants perhaps a bigger role. Those two things might be mutually exclusive, but don't tell that to Kyle. So the question here, though, the reason I bring up that trade offer, which includes 9,000 different people and only has the Lakers giving up two picks in terms of things of value around the league. Kyle Kuzma, like, maybe you could get him for an unprotected first, and you know, you balance the salaries and stuff like that. Maybe you have to throw some other stuff in. Bogdanovich, the competition for him is going to be pretty fierce around the league, especially since you get another year of him at a very reasonable salary. What the Lakers can get with those two first round picks is, I think, guys like that. I think you're gonna struggle to get a star in the conventional sense with that, unless you're picking up somebody who is deeply flawed in one way or another, whether that's Kyrie, who's probably not going anywhere now that the Nets are playing well anyway, and or an injured guy or something, or you know, Bradley Beal, who you know has signed until 2049 at $642 million a year. The Lakers have very limited capital. And so if you think you can completely remake this team with two first round picks and even somebody like Reeves, Austin Reeves, who is appealing to other people, but it's going to cost them money this offseason.
Well, it also too, it gets to that question of if the Lakers don't have that much either in player assets or trade assets beyond the limitations that it puts on them in trying to make a significant move, it also raises the question of how significant a move is necessary in order for it to be worth it in the first place. Like,
and I was thinking about this because, you know, Tuesday's game, and we alluded to this and talked about it a little bit for Wednesday's show, but Tuesday's game points to both sides of this. On the one hand, it's like, yes, like the Lakers are playing better. They have demonstrated that they can stay in games and play with the better teams in the league. And I expect when they go out on the road, they'll have a couple clunkers, as every team does, but they're going to have a lot of competitive games against Phoenix and Sacramento and some of these other teams that are playing well. I think they'll have a chance to beat Miami, who is struggling, and they ought to beat Charlotte, even if LaMelo Ball is back. And I think they'll do those things. But they also are running a formula that is unsustainable, where you are going to kill LeBron and Anthony Davis in the process of getting this team over the hump. And so, you know, if you could get them a little bit of help, doesn't even, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic would do a lot of things for this team. Kyle Kuzma would do a lot of things for this team. And I don't think I'm being overly homerish when I say that they're one or two solid players from being potentially a very good team. I wouldn't call them the best in the West, but a team that if guys stay healthy can be very good, like as a top end. I don't think that's crazy.
It's not
incredibly risky, but I don't think it's crazy.
It's not crazy, but it is worth pointing out Bogdanovic, Kuzma, those are 20 point per game scorers that you're talking about adding, which makes them upper third level minimum scorers in the league. My point being, those are not insignificant additions, which...
Oh, right. They're not stars. They're
right,
not,
but yeah, sure.
And they're useful not just because of the points that they can score, which would help. They're useful because of their size, because of the position they play, way they sort out the rest of the rotation, and all.
I get all that. All I'm saying is they're not trades around the margins. That's all I'm getting at. Bringing in Bogdanovic, bringing in Kuzma, that's not a trade around the margins. That's a pretty significant addition.
Perhaps not around the margins, but guys who would be considered supporting characters.
Right, but they're pretty.
They're really good. And yeah, which support. Is why, by the way, that may cost you both. You know, there. It is not crazy to me that the market for Bogdanovic, or you know, the market for Kyle Kuzma, or something like that. Maybe players of that caliber could be a lot more expensive than Lakers fans. And then you have to decide, like, if you trade picks for Kuzma, you are in the Kyle Kuzma business going forward. You cannot possibly not extend him going forward. You have to give him another contract. You cannot let Kuzma get away in the way that you decided Dennis Schroeder wasn't worth the, you know, I guess in Schroeder's case, they tried to pay him. He wouldn't take the money.
They did their damn best.
They did their best. And, you know, but point being, you can't get nothing. You can't be left, you know, holding the bag, so to speak, you know, and not have the player. Like, and that's your team going forward. So you have to be comfortable with this being the group that you have. And I don't think the advantage... The disadvantage to trading for somebody like Kuzma, if you think he could be available for this summer, is if you think you could sign him, or you think he'll be available in the offseason some way, maybe you could acquire him without giving up as much stuff. The downside of that is, of course, maybe you don't get him at all, and obviously you don't have him for this season.
When you say what trade is worth it, you are saying how salvageable is this season? How far do you think you can go even having to expend that energy, digging yourself out from under 500, how competitive can you be? How competitive do you need to be in the eyes of the front office? What do you ultimately want to come from this season? Because if you are still going with the Lakers are a championship ethos, we play for titles, we have LeBron James.
You're never going to get there.
Well, you're never going to get there, but you're also never going to make a move. But it raises just the question of what are you trying to do with the rest of the LeBron AD era, however long you think it will last, should last, want it to last, whatever. It raises the overarching question of just what are you trying to accomplish other than relevancy by having LeBron and AD on this roster.
All right, so I'll leave you with one more number. This, again, from our friend Raj Shapalu at Silver Screen and Roll, mentioned the crunch time. We were talking about crunch time on Wednesday's show. So in addition to Alex's stats about combinations and, you know, the first quarter deficits and the impact of Patrick Beverley and Dennis Schroeder playing together, the Lakers finished Tuesday's game 27th in crunch time defense and dead last in crunch time offense. They're the worst crunch time team offensively in the NBA. So if you can fix some of the lineup questions, if you can put yourself in a position where it's not just Troy Brown that is the option there, it is Kyle Kuzma in your starting lineup bumping out somebody like Patrick Beverley, or Bogdanovich bumping out Patrick Beverley, or Dennis Schroeder, whoever it might be. Russell Westbrook theoretically maybe is gone in a scenario. What impact would that have on the starts that you're having? What impact would that have? I'm not asking you to answer right now. What impact would that have on your offense in the last 5 minutes of a game? What impact would that having a better offense have on your defense in the last 5 minutes of a game? The ripple effect, if you're an optimist about this stuff, the ripple effect for this team for making a trade in supporting cast and improving that structure behind LeBron and AD fixes these types of things, hopefully. And until so it's then, an interesting.
Until then, taking this full circle, don't keep trotting out lineups that start a game where you are automatically putting yourself in a hole.
100% agree. Huge game against Denver for Friday, and it's just going to get harder going back out on the road. You don't like having must-win games, and people hate when we use this expression before Christmas, but I'm going to keep doing it because they can't keep losing. If they want to have games after Christmas mean a whole lot. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go see the show. See everybody Friday.